This is a Federal News Network podcast.
The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement on Federal News Network. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy, trends, innovations, and debates. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, and he's also chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Tom Sisti is also joining us. He's executive vice president and general counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. I'm Roger Waldron, and we're going to be talking all things procurement, a sort of procurement potpourri. We're, you know, 6 months into the new year and, you know, I guess 5 months into a new administration. Lots going on in the policy area, in particular around government-wide contracting. So I couldn't think of two better folks to have come on the show and share their thoughts. And so, guys, let's get it rolling and talk first about the schedules program. I know that's near and dear to Bill's heart in particular, and just where it is. I think it, one of the things to get your insights, Bill, because I think it's a recurring pattern, is that you saw a significant growth in schedule sales over the last year. And you any thoughts on that?
I think the $5 billion last year, and I think is an estimated increase for sales. And that was during a pandemic. So I'm sure a lot of it was for the use of services and products associated, you know, with the pandemic, and as well as the, I guess people are ordering from home when you think of that, right?
I mean, right.
So I'm not sure if it's easier to buy from home than it is in the office. Maybe that's another thing we can talk about. But also the, I think, couple things, and I think you just had the spring training conference, Roger. So I'm sure a lot of folks have heard that today. But to start off with, you know, while it's always easy to make recommendations of programs, I'll give GSA credit for following through on combining, consolidating the schedule in phase three and wrapping up phase two. So, you know, hats off to them on that. And I know the beta, you know, test they had for SAM kind of had a little rough start. I'm not quite sure where it is today, but, you know, at least they've got it to, they got rid of the betas, so now they're really having to fine tune it. So those are two big heavy lifts over the past, 18 to 24 months at least. So we'll start off with that. But I think part of all of that, you know, leads to a discussion of, training, I know, is an easy topic to talk about, and it's easy to second guess people. But, you know, I think there's a real need to have a training session for at least the contracting people under the schedules program, because there's been such significant change. And we're talking about the operational level, and maybe at the policy level too, but the operational level to carry out all these changes that have come through. We interface a lot with the operational folks, and, you know, even this past week when we get the company together and we talk about things. But, you know, one statement made by a contracting officer that, you know, floored me. They stated that you cannot add services or products to your schedule for the purpose of growing your business. You know, and so and then another one from a different region says you can't add a new special item number to your contract and with products and services. I mean, if you're not out the services, you don't add a new SIM. So, I mean, these are indicators of a need to really have some, I hate to call it basic training, but there are folks that they've brought in, which is nice. They're hiring people, but I think in fairness to put them as a face of the program to industry and really make these kind of statements shows, you know, a need for training. I'll put it that way.
Well, to your point, it is basic training. It's like the fundamentals of government procurement, and they and the folks need the skills, you know, and the knowledge base to be able to execute on behalf of the government. And, you know, because at the end of the day, those positions will hurt the customer. because it results in delays in getting product under contract at fair and reasonable prices. I mean, the other thing along those lines is just the consistency with the GSAR in terms of price negotiation approaches, but even more fundamentally with the FAR. And when you're comparing, you know, pricing in the context of transactional data reporting and the consideration of terms and conditions and differing terms and conditions and what the value of those are, that, you know, that you're seeing a lack of execution on those kind of things as well. So I think it's almost like a fast 2021 for GSA acquisition workforce internal would be a wonderful thing to do, I think. So, Tom, you have any thoughts?
I think that there's sort of this unspoken issue or not given enough, an issue that's not given enough credit. And that is that if you don't have consistency in the execution of the program, you disincent use of the program. You disincent the use on the agency side, where they start going out and doing their own things, which then leads to contract duplication, or you disincent vendors coming into the space, because you have to remember that it's always a cost alternative decision that they're going to make. And if they see that this is just dragging too much administrative cost out of me, I can focus my efforts elsewhere, they will. So it hurts the, you know, it kind of has a spiraling effect on the program. So it hurts the program, hurts the vendors, it hurts the agency users. Most importantly, as Bill said at the very beginning, you know, it's easy to talk about training, because, you know, training is always the first topic discussed, and it's the first item on a budget list that gets whacked. Okay. But it's probably the most critical. Because again, if you don't have this level of consistency across programs, you really could do damage.
Right. Well, to your point, you know, to Bill's point, GSA has done a great job, you know, with the consolidation and moving forward on that. Yes. Yeah. And they're working on the systems and making progress on those. There's these pieces of the puzzle, and, you know, so I think really what we're saying is time to focus on that human capital piece.
Right.
To try to develop that. Bill, any other thoughts on where the schedules are right now?
Well, I think, you know, we talked about GSA here. I don't want to leave VA out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, VA has the schedules program as well. And the common thread here is that it's the VA also needs training as well. I mean, you know, just one practical, or just one example, I guess, of what's going on. We've been dealing with someone for a long time on prosthetics. And you hear where VA, from the top and throughout the VA, people talk about their mission to serve the veteran and offer them the latest and greatest health care and other benefits that they provide, which is the mission of the department. And yet at the contracting level, you know, when you think of a prosthetic, there's not one prosthetic fits all a product in. And so, but the contracting officer, a company who was asked by VA medical staff to get a VA schedule to offer their prosthetics. And so they did that, and they're going through it, but the contracting officer rejected it because it had the word customization associated with the product. And that one word, the contracting officer refuses to let the product line come under, but it's basically a commercial way they describe what they do. So these are the business sides, Roger. And I don't want to, you know, get too deep into all this, but it's like, what are we here for? Is, you know, and I think we're trying to make things more difficult, and also the perform, and that's on the VA side. But so there's a common thread through both agency and department there on the I don't think training has been conducted for quite a while. I know we had the 1 year pandemic and all that, and everybody likes to do virtual, but I think sometimes it's good to have a good business meeting with people who have a voice in a room, and then it creates a whole different dialogue. So that's kind of about, you know, I'll stop on the training side. I think we made our point.
Well, we're up on that time, Bill, but to your point, customization is the commercial practice for that particular product. So
nice.
Why would it not fit in the program? And the last point, I think, on the VA, and then we'll have to take the break, is You know, the VA is very interested and motivated to utilize some of GSA systems and capabilities to leverage that across government. I think there's a great opportunity, a wonderful opportunity there to support the veterans with GSA and VA working together on systems, and whether it's eOffer and other systems that currently support the schedules that could be leveraged, the GSA schedules that could be leveraged over at the VA, and we'll see where that goes. But we do have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on government-wide contracting. Maybe we'll, see if there's anything else you want to talk about schedules before moving on to, BICMAC, or what's currently now known as the Services MAC. My guests today are Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group and chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Tom Sisti. He is executive vice president and general counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. I'm Roger Waldron, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guests today are Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group, and Tom Sisti, executive vice president, general counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And when we took the break, we spent the first segment talking about the schedules. I think we had two more little items we wanted, or not so little items we wanted to touch on in the schedules context, Bill. I think one of them was TDR, and the other was Office Package Program, which is a furniture program. So why don't you talk a little bit about TDR first?
So TDR, Transactional Data Reporting. I mean, if the listeners have a schedule, then they obviously should be aware of it. If they're not, they should look into it. I think it's a step that GSA took, three or four years ago.
Yep.
It was a pilot.
3 years ago, I believe, yep.
This is actually a pilot that landed.
Yeah, that's right. It sure did.
And so, GSA said they were going to evaluate it based on, the results of the program or the data they had. And I guess they went through, ups and downs in the evaluation process over time. I guess maybe it took TDR time to mature enough so they could have enough sufficient data. And so, as many people may know or may not know, Jeff Kosis, who's in charge of the acquisition side of GSA on policy, term executive, may have made a determination that the TDR pilot results were in, and that the program showed that it was successful, and that it was up to the policy folks now at FAS to further implement the policy side of that and expand it, where appropriate. So I think that's Roger, that's a good overall indication of demonstrating that the market volatility on pricing, can't be met under the current existing multiple award schedule policy, with the commercial sales practice. It's just not, it just can't do it. And the IG has recognition they provide a service, a warranted service. And I think, the commercial sales practice has always been, or defective pricing, has always been an area. And I think that, this is going to allow, more sunshine to be in this area of, hey, this is the way the market is running, and that the government, net is supposed to be getting fair and reasonable pricing. And I think the competition at the task order level or purchase order level really allows that, and the schedules host that capability. So that's a long statement on TDR, but I think that's to GSA's credit. Now they got to further implement it.
Yeah, it reflects where the market is and it's currently going.
Yeah.
And the commercial sales practices is a oversight mechanism that's after the fact trying to, hold people accountable for certain pricing decisions. Tom, what does this say about the role of data? When you talk about TDR.
Well, I think to Bill's point, it just says that the market, the world, is evolving towards digitization generally and towards the use of data and defined metrics to evaluate the ongoing performance of a program relative to the articulated vision of the program, and to allow, theoretically, at least from a management standpoint, management to view what the program is doing and commit to making remediating action, taking remediating action, or canceling a program that doesn't, look like it's going to turn out the way it was envisioned. But the whole idea is the data, this use of TDR occurs in a greater context, and that is that because of the rapid speed of technological evolution, certainly in the IT realm, and just in relative to the needs of agencies in mission fulfillment, the actions under a contract need to be more real time rather than retrospective. Right. And the only way you do that is by leveraging different data elements, identifying metrics, and constantly managing and measuring performance as it takes place.
Right. Yeah, that's
Roger, if you don't mind, the objective, I think it's recognized that whether organization or single individuals, everybody wants to get the best price. Okay. I mean, just from a philosophical or an objective standpoint. And basically nobody gets the best price because it's a changing market.
Right.
And so I think the way it's set up now is like, there's a stake in the ground on the commercial sales practice and nothing moves away from it. But the market, to Tom's point, the market has moved away, and then the CSP and the contractor sitting there and having to hold their ground. And that's becoming harder to hold their ground on a compliance just by nature of business. I think this is an idea. I think if I read correctly this morning, it was the UK last year, they were holding off buying the vaccination because they wanted the best price in the world, and it had a negative impact on them. And I mean, nobody, and I know it's not the proper thing to say, but nobody does get the best price. There's too many variables. Yeah, there could be variables in there. But
or if the people who can't get their mind around that, you can get the best price at that millisecond.
Right. Yeah.
Under a certain set of variables, but you have to be open to the fact that the market's going to change. If you bought lumber 2 months ago, you had a much different price than you're going to pay today.
Right. Yeah. So office packaged program or packaged office, excuse me, at GSA and the furniture. Just a couple thoughts on what that is and where it is right now, Bill.
Yeah. Well, the IG did a review of the program, and programs have been around. I know sometimes it can play for you or against you, but it's been around about 25 years. And the reason it was set up is basically no different than the need for it today. Is from a customer focus standpoint. And I was, and I have some background in this, so I can speak with some experience and not, with real examples. But when someone's setting up an agency or department, even now with the COVID, where people are going to be changing their work environment, there may be multiple products that were products from multiple companies. And to have someone sit down and figure it all out internally within the agency, it becomes very difficult. And to try and get what fits them the best for their environment, the package office was set up, which really reduces the total acquisition cost of the program. And by having, one entity to talk to, and that entity can go ahead and provide all those products from multiple OEMs. And take care of it as a one order deal instead of hundreds or thousands of orders. And so that's the reason it was set up, and that's lost in here. I think in fairness to the IG, maybe they don't have the customer's perspective, which is why the program was set up. And I think that did not play out in the, at least the report that we saw. And I know people have, what started the program, I think was one of the agencies was setting up a new facility, and all the stuff was being ordered independently by a lot of different people, and everything was coming in, the lamps, the desks, the chairs, all the wall art, all that was coming in. But the basic fundamental need for that agency was carpet, and the carpet got back ordered. And so I don't want to get into it all here, but I think you can just imagine the logistics of they had to move this stuff two or three times. The carpet finally came in, but products get damaged when you keep handling them. So it was a significant cost. The customer came, talked to me, and just about took my head off, which was good. And said, we got to figure this out. And so that's kind of what was behind some of this. Now, hopefully GSA sees the light to hopefully look at this and reevaluate and see how they can maybe better explain their program, you know, or maybe make better change. If they need to make changes, fine. But net, it's it really serves the customer, and it's grown quite a bit over the years as a whole.
Right. It's a pro customer program as well as a pro small business program. So it's good. It's, and from that perspective.
Yeah, they're all small businesses. And we don't want to base it just on that, but it's clearly what the administration's objective to increase contracting. This is a great example of what small businesses can do for the government.
So I hesitate to bring up this topic because we only got about a minute and a half left. But BCMAC, or now what is also known as the Services Multiple Award Contract. So I know that's been a big focus of lots of service providers, and you know, here, and it's the follow on to OASIS, but is it really? I think is the big issue. And Bill, just some opening quick couple comments, and then we'll take a break and we can pick back up after we come back.
Just as a kind of a teaser, I know, as obviously the coalition, I know that you've got a significant amount of feedback from industry, and industry doesn't mind providing comments in a general public setting sometimes, but sometimes they prefer to go through the coalition. So Roger, I know you've written things on this, so I think it's going to be an interesting topic when we come back. I'll leave it. Right.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thanks for the tease. We'll take the break now. My guests today are Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, chair of the coalition, Tom Sisti, executive vice president, general counsel for the coalition for government procurement. I'm Roger Waldron, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guests today, Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement, Tom Sisti, executive vice president, general counsel at the Coalition for Government Procurement. And guys, when we took the break, we had just teased BCMAC, or also known as the Services MAC, I guess now. Bill, your opening thoughts.
Well, I think it's always, I guess this is going to be a follow-on contract, right?
Is
the intent here for OASIS. So you should always look at it to see where improvements can be made. We've talked about changes to the schedules program before this segment. And so I think here it's logical to go ahead and review a program, but to move totally away from it. Is it 10 or 9 or 10 billion dollars?
Yeah, on an annual basis last year did over 10 billion dollars.
Yeah, and they got major DOD customers. I think they also have a major internal GSA customer who uses that as well for other agencies and departments.
Bill, you're absolutely right. They have some major customers. The Department of Defense is the biggest user of it. It's a strategic vehicle for them. And you know, FedSIM and the Assisted Services Office at GSA also uses this as a strategic vehicle platform. So it's going to be interesting what the, you know, overall impact on those programs and those customers in this context as well. You have other thoughts, Bill?
Well, I would say the key component here is the customer. All right. I mean, I think we get the three-legged stool. We got GSA, you got industry together there to serve the government, you know, the government, ultimate government customer. So, you know, it's like, how much effort do you put into trying to move away from a program and start a new one is a question, because it does create confusion, you know, for a lot of people, even internally at GSA. And that doesn't say people aren't up for change, Roger, but I think the key is, you know, there's a lot going on. We've already talked about that in contracting. And I think the recompete is being reviewed. I think it's like, how do you build upon the success you already have in getting the feedback from the customers? And it just seems like GSA is driving this initiative. And I know you've mentioned it before, but you know, where's the business case? And now I understand GSA has said they are building the business case. And that's good. So I think that the customer's voice should be heard in that business case. Okay. And for GSA to figure out how to better serve that customer. And I think, you know, I know this is, somewhat conflicts with the schedules program, but I think it's a different cut of within the industry that this program has demonstrated the success on by having some kind of pre-qualified evaluation to get the award, which is different than the schedules.
Right. So And to your point, they should pay attention to the customer, but there's not just the customers you're trying to get. There's the customers you already have, right? And you want recurring revenue, right, at the end of the day. You taught me that, Bill. Yeah. So, Tom, have thoughts on, I know, in particular, the business case?
Well, you know, if you step away from this, you're reminded of two adages. One is, if it's not broken, don't fix it, right? And here you have a program, last year did $10 billion. It provided two channels, one for small businesses and one for other than small businesses. 40% of that business went to small businesses. That's a big, big deal. And right now, we're trying to nurture small businesses under this administration. So it's really hard to understand, like, what's the broken? And it goes to the second point, the second adage, which is ready, fire, aim. In my mind, you don't draft a business case after you started producing business plans or solicitation approaches. It's kind of like shooting an arrow into a tree and then painting a bullseye around it. What you should be doing is conducting your business case first, yeah, and then saying, okay, how is my plan going to meet this business case? And that business case will account for what might be broken. Maybe there's nothing broken. I just need to tweak something. But right now, the whole approach to this is kind of challenging, let's just say, and confusing.
I think, to your point, like, you know, alternatives, what are we trying to do? Are there new features that are needed? But
exactly.
to articulate a vision and actually planning documents that, that basically demonstrate a decision has been made, and then say, but no, we're still doing a business case. It confuses the customer. It confuses industry.
Well, the stakes are very high because, look, if this is meeting fundamental needs of agencies right now, right?
And it is.
And the agencies don't perceive a coherent plan going forward. They're going to duplicate, which is going to add administrative cost acquisition. It's going to challenge any new program you come up with and challenge all of the parallel programs to that program. So it's better to start and slow it down, start it out the right way, and do it in a methodical fashion.
Right. And so any last thoughts on this, Bill? How about cost reimbursement on schedule? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think some may argue that that's not within the scope of the program. But, you know, in talking to you, Roger, and others, you know, I think there's clearly an opportunity that this could be that could be added to the schedules program. Clearly, with as much effort being put into this big Mac or the services Mac, it would not take that much effort to add the cost reimbursement to the schedules program. Yeah.
And the context of that, too, is that GSA is asking thousands of companies potentially to invest bid and proposal costs to get on a vehicle that looks exactly like the schedules, except that has cost reimbursement. And so if they're already on schedule, it'd be a much easier, ability to modify that contract to add that capability as appropriate, right? You have to work through all the policy issues, but it's almost like shifting, the resources and shifting the work from one to another. Yes, Tom.
Well, I mean, this goes again to the importance of doing this thing in a logical fashion. You know, if you're doing a business case, your business case is going to assess, hey, what is out there? Can I leverage my existing mass contracting system and infrastructure rather than creating a duplicative infrastructure for the services MAC? Are customer agencies familiar with that process? Are you stakeholders like government contractors familiar with that process? The schedule is a high value source for small business contracting. Do I get to leverage that platform to expand small business contracting? Do you avoid the unnecessary consequences of duplication? I mean, there are a whole bunch of issues that you can address by planning this right. And I think part of the business case analysis is going to have to be assessing if you can't stay with the current structure, then why you can't utilize the already existing successful structure that you have in the schedules.
Bill?
Yeah, in regards to Tom's point here's the deal. For small business, the MAS program, to GSA's credit, the GSA program is the lowest cost entry to the federal market, period. There is no other program that offers the scope that gives the opportunity for anybody to sell to the government worldwide, and in some cases, the state government. And I think the key here is that the customer has spoken under the schedules program for years.
Yes.
And the customer's spoken under OASIS, but it seems like, I mean, if you kept changing the name of the schedules program, it would not be what it is today. So it's like, you know, you just can't keep doing that and think you're modernizing it. And I think, and I mean this with all good intent with GSA, because there's not a pure recognition of what this change means, not only to the customer, but within the industry. It's just, you can't just go back and forth and changing ideas, and because it costs money, and that's where industries really, you know, has kind of found a sweet spot in a recognition of the value of the program. So they're willing to compete for that sweet spot, being OASIS. And I think GSA is, I think that should be, you know, taken into consideration maybe more so than it has been so far.
And again, and with that customer, you know, demand as well. So we're at the break, guys. When we come back, I think we're going to turn to, you know, something else that I know GSA has a big focus on, but the entire federal government and the private sector has a major focus on. That's cybersecurity and supply chain, you know, and especially in the wake of the recent ransomware attacks. My guests today are Bill Gormley. He's the president of Gormley Group, chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Tom Sisti. He's executive vice president and general counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. I'm Roger Waldron, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network. I'm Roger Waldron. My guest today, Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Tom Sisti, executive vice president and general counsel for the coalition. And, you know, Tom, this is, I know, an area you track and watch quite closely. And then we're talking cybersecurity and, you know, supply chain and that sort of thing. And I know it was a big topic at our spring conference as well. And I know, you know, the president just recently issued his executive order. You know, just so where are we right now? You know, just big picture from a federal government perspective.
Well, I think we're in two places. One, we've got a lot on our plate with respect to the executive order, and two, I think people are nervous given the current events, right? But the executive order, I think everybody knows this executive order on cybersecurity was issued last month. It contains a lot of positive elements. All right, certainly this notion of information sharing, so that people understand threats and incidents and risk. This is stuff that's been discussed for a long time, and it's nice to see it in an order. This whole notion of cyber incident reporting, the use of this zero trust architecture, which treats everybody as a risk. The centralization and streamlining of cybersecurity data to drive analytics. Again, this same as in procurement, this notion of having an analytical focus in connection with identifying and managing cyber risk, the commitment to invest in the technology and the personnel to match this a modernization goal for cybersecurity. I think we saw things like with respect to the cloud, the emphasis on prioritizing transition to the cloud, utilizing for the civilian agencies at least the FedRAMP process, which also would be modernized, authenticating data and encrypting data in rest and data in motion.
So Tom, when you talk about all these things, and you know, and it is like, you know, we're all in this together, right? So in certain all sense, right. do you see from a big picture in terms of standards and requirements and information exchanging a sort of, I know what the right, a merging of the government and commercial standards, or will one lead the other? In the old days, old in quotes, you know, like the commercial was going to drive things, right?
Yes.
Is this an area where the federal standards are eventually going to drive things, or, you know, or is it going to be a holistic, both sides raising the standards? How do you see it playing out?
I think right now we have a directive from top down. I think that to implement this and to make it effective, it also has to come from the bottom up. I think it can't, you know, top down directives last as long as there's a top to push down. Okay. But to bring the order to this kind of meaningful implementation, it's going to require a concerted effort, I think, of all the stakeholders involved that are working with these matters day to day. It's going to require collaboration with industry, and it's going to require give and take, I think, on everybody's part. I think people are going to have to be open to, and frankly, before being open to it, recognizing that the way they're doing business may not be the way they do it before. I mean, you look at the software sections to talk about providing a software bill of materials, to talk about the provenance of the components of software, where they're coming from, who's doing it, whether we need to yank out software. I mean, this is stuff that may have been talked about before, but was never articulated in this fashion, this clearly, this directly. And I think it's going to require people also at the agency level, certainly the contractor stakeholder level, to be engaged in working on this to bring this idea of cyber to fruition. Because, you know, you look at some of the other initiatives like the implementation of 889. I mean, and you can't just sit back and wait. You're going to have to move on this.
Right, if you're a company, right, and yeah, a government, right? But you, it's almost like that executive order was like, what, over the years, all these ideas that government folks had about how to address security. And the opportunity for the executive order, and they put them all in, right?
It came out pretty fast. That's all I can say. Yeah. You know?
So Bill, just from the perspective, this, it's, you know, I think Tom was sort of alluding to it at the end here. This means lots of investment on the part of government contractors, you know, to comply with, you know, emerging and continuing evolving government requirements in this area. But it also provides opportunity, it seems to me, is that's for those companies that, you know, provide cloud or provide other capabilities to, you know, with regard to cyber defense, you know, and even offense at a certain point, right? That the government's going to be looking at. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Tom's the expert here, but as far as the practical side of the business world, the companies are going to have to pay attention to it, whether it's government or, you know, prior to the order anyway. You know, you hear about all the cybersecurity, ransomware and all that. You know, it's ratcheting up, I guess. And you got the Bitcoin payments. So people are, it's almost as though there's more temptation to hack now because of Bitcoin.
And you can, right,
because you can't trace it. So I think we all, you know, not only through this order, but we in our own lives are going to, you see this more and more, and I think we just have to pay attention to what kind of instruments we use and what's the capability they have as far as security. But on the business side, companies are going to have to do it anyway. I mean, maybe not to the degree the government wants them to, but I think that I like Tom has a great, you know, example of it's got to be from the bottom up. I mean, you know, it sounds good top down, but the bottom up is really where you're going to get everybody. You know, it has to be game on here and understand throughout the work they do that is this something that will improve our security and not affect our systems. I mean, I think that's what's going to make it effective.
Now, Tom, we got about a minute left.
All right. Just quickly, if you think about everything that's happened, all right, we had a pipeline issue. We had a ferry issue. We had a hospital issue. We had a meatpacking issue. Okay?
Do we have the New York transit system, too?
That's what I'm saying. So all of that in a short period of time, there is going to be a point where these companies are going to have to answer to a public outcry for liability. All right. And people are not going to be tolerating this idea that, okay, well, this happens and things like that. They're going to start calling for accountability. And I don't think you want to be in front of that bus when it's, you know, speeding down the highway. I think you want to be on the bus and driving
it. Right. Yep. I think you're absolutely right when you stop to think about how frustrated people get when they're trying to get service, like, you know, on the phone or online, and it doesn't go through. If this, right. You know, they're going to say, hey, wait a second, what gives here? Bill, one final thought.
Yeah, to Tom's point, I mean, what's going to happen? Maybe it's already, but we haven't heard enough. Once this item is on shareholder board meetings, yes. They've invested in these companies for many different reasons, but that the net of it is this company vulnerable. That's going to pressure on a lot of people.
You know, if you think about it, you've got a scenario here where we can't even get robocalls screened. Right. People are going to be very upset, and we're expecting a lot more now.
Right. And insurance, too, is part of this, like insurance companies, like, you know, all that's going to be a big part of it, too. So thanks, guys. I want to thank my guest today, Bill Gormley, president of the Gormley Group, chair of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Tom Sisti, executive vice president and general counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. I'm Roger Waldron, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement on Federal News Network. Tune in Tuesday mornings at 11 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.